This podcast is a really important podcast, and it's important because there's a lot of misinformation and lack of information out there on the internet, on the TV stations and everything, about treatment of COVID-19. And you know that I bring to you truth just below the surface. And that's what we're going to do today. And I want you to listen, take notes, play it over again, and then pass it on to your friends. And if you have any doctors, pass it on to them too. I'm going to talk with Yvette Lozano, medical doctor, today. And her practice is in Dallas, Texas. And she's a board-certified family physician. And I've seen pictures of her clinic and pictures of her patients. And I know that she's 100% legitimate. She just happens to be in an area that's overrun with COVID. And she's trying to do the best that she can to take care of her patients. And I believe she told me that she has somewhere in the neighborhood of 450 files, active files, that she's seen since this pandemic hit. But I'm going to let her tell you all the details. Dr. Lozano, it's nice to have you on my program today.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Henderson, for your invitation. I did want to correct you. I'm actually not a board-certified family practice physician. Actually, my training is in general surgery. I have an active urgent care center, Lozano Medical Clinic in Dallas, Texas, and I have been practicing as family practice physician in that capacity in my urgent care center. We tried to start it off as like a mini ER, but patients kept coming back, and so it actually turned out to be more of a family practice location. Thank you for having me today.
Yeah, I can identify that because I was originally an emergency room physician, and when I went into private practice, even though we did some things in the clinic that I also did in the emergency room, the type of patients and the length of time that they would be your patients was totally different. So I understand what you're telling me. Okay, so when did you start seeing COVID patients?
Well, actually, to be totally honest, I believe that I probably had a COVID patient in December and probably had one or two in February. These were patients that came in that appeared to have traditional flu and just didn't get better. Just really took extra trips to the office to get these people better. And the reason I remember them is because they had respiratory symptoms that seemed to linger. And on at least one of those occasions, one of those patients was sent to a pulmonary specialist. And the pulmonary specialist was unable to identify or diagnose the symptom that the patient was having. In March, I was in the middle of spring break when everything closed down. I was in the Florida Keys and came home and back to the office, so about mid-March, and we started having just a steady flow of patients coming into the office. It was very interesting because at that time, the patients that were coming into my office were not my regular patients. And what we were hearing over and over again was that the local physicians were closed, their regular doctors were closed, and these patients frantically looking for someone because they were so ill were just going down a list of available doctors in the area. And when they came to the office, lo and behold, 99% of these cases were COVID cases. So we got slammed pretty early. This was probably mid-March.
And when you make a diagnosis of a COVID-19 illness. To what extent do you use your training with a history and physical and symptoms as opposed to having a positive or negative test?
Well, that's a great question. So I'm pretty traditional physician. I'm kind of an old family doctor. Everything in my office has to do with hands-on and the physical exam. I was trained at UTMB surgically, and I was trained at Texas Tech Health Science Center for my medical training. And at Texas Tech, the physical exam was actually the most important part of the physician-patient encounter. And so every patient that comes into the office has to see me. I am the only doctor in my office. We do not use any other mid-level providers. I'm very much against the use of mid-level providers. Every patient is fully examined by me, and we go head to toes. Usually your first exam or your first visit with me in the office runs about probably, 45 minutes. We do a thorough history taking, which I do myself, and then we do a physical exam, and that's followed up with an appropriate blood test to see what the underlying disease is. A lot of times these patients come from other physicians, and they're just looking for a second opinion, but pretty much I stay the course of the interview, the physical exam, and then the appropriate laboratory values. Pretty traditional.
Would I be correct in assuming that because of the COVID crisis that you can't spend as much time as you used to?
Unfortunately, you are correct. And that's probably the reason for speaking with you today is that, last Wednesday I had 57 people show up to my office. There is absolutely no way for me to spend the appropriate amount of time with these patients. And these patients coming to see me now are extremely ill. Many of them are in respiratory distress. Many of them come with their COVID test in hand. They have high fevers. They have low oxygenation. And so the physical exam has been narrowed down to essentials. And the history taking is, very pertinent to the complaint that the patient has. Definitely not the kind of medicine that I ever wanted to practice or thought I would be practicing. And the problem for this is the fact that I have no other colleagues that are open. Their clinics are closed. These doctors are not seeing patients. And they're offering telemedicine, which is, in my opinion, malpractice. There's no way to be able to see the severity of the lung symptoms in these patients who are hypoxic. You can't get an oxygen saturation through a telemedicine exam. You don't know the temperature, the fevers that they come in with. And so I think that's very crucial that other physicians open their practices and start actively examining these patients.
Okay, this may be a little controversial. Why is it that you think that these other doctors are not seeing patients the way you see them?
That is really the million-dollar question. I cannot imagine why these doctors are not open. It totally baffles me. Cannot wrap my brain around it. We're in the middle of a worldwide pandemic, and physicians are the first line of defense. And, we've been trained. We've been trained for this. And so I don't understand why they're not open, and I don't understand why the American Medical Association is encouraging these physicians to stay in their homes and not examine and treat these people. The American Medical Association is actually encouraging telemedicine, which I think is unbelievably, it'd be wrong thing to do. And on a phone call that I was invited to on a podcast that they were doing with these American Medical Association physicians, their only concern in the middle of a pandemic was trying to get more funding from the federal government to bring in foreign medical doctors to help treat COVID patients. I don't understand why we didn't want foreign medical doctors when we've got plenty of American-trained doctors that can treat COVID patients if they would just open up their offices, come to their offices and see these patients. I'm having to see patients that belong to other doctors, and not just from Dallas, Texas. I mean, these patients are coming from California, Chicago, Tennessee, Mississippi. I mean, I could go on and on, you know, Arizona, Arkansas, obviously all the states in Texas. And this adds another difficulty to my examination of the patient because they're now, you know, having the expense of traveling. The travel is very trying on their health and on their stress levels. Obviously, you would feel more comfortable if you were being examined and treated by your own doctor instead of a new doctor that you do not know. And many of these patients are having to come because there is no one in their state that is treating COVID. These doctors are telling their patients to go to the emergency room to get a COVID test. And these patients are going to the emergency room thinking that they're going to get treated. And they get their COVID test. The emergency room gets a $13,000 bonus for a positive COVID test. And then they send them home for 2 weeks to quarantine, at which time most of them get worse. And again, when they call their physicians, they're referred back to the emergency room only to be admitted when the respiratory symptoms are so dire that they require intubation and mechanical ventilation. Inappropriate when we can treat so many of these people early. First line of defense is your doctor's office, your primary care provider, who has been your doctor for years and should be open and should be treating you now, today.
Okay, so that's one of the things that we want to get across to the people.
I don't think that's controversial.
No.
I just don't think that's controversial. When doctors take an oath to become physicians, they're physicians during a worldwide pandemic, too. I mean, this is, I can kind of relate this to being on a boat, and the boat is sinking. The first one off the boat is not the captain of the boat. He stays there until all the passengers are safely accommodated. And so I'm extremely disappointed in my fellow colleagues that have chosen to stay at home and hide behind telemedicine and not appropriately care for these patients.
What is your feeling personally? Can you protect yourself in your office?
So I will tell you that I have treated over 450 patients in my office. I will tell you that the first patients that I treated, I was very, very nervous, very anxious. I had a pretty good feeling that if I caught this, I could use hydroxychloroquine to treat myself. I chose not to do prophylaxis in my office for myself because I was concerned that there was not enough hydroxychloroquine on the market and wanted to make sure that that medication was not, you know, used or inappropriately used. I will tell you that if you examined me, Dr. Henderson, you would find that my hands are cracked and they're raw. My skin is very dry. I wash my hands, you know, 300-400 times a day. Every time I go in and out of a room, the hands are washed. I wear gloves when I'm examining these patients because I actually need to see them and feel them. They are comforted when they see me because I'm not afraid to be in the same room with them. This leads me to believe that since I have not contracted COVID, since I have not become infected, nor has my staff become infected, that this virus is likely not airborne. But because I have so many patients that come and then they bring their family members, I have one family that had, you know, seven family members affected. I believe that this is definitely transmitted through contact, direct contact. And it's mostly, I think, in the homes. And I hear story after story after story where it's pretty obvious that the contact was in the home, either a grandchild that came to visit the grandparents or, you know, a trip where there were people in the same car for long periods of time. But it does look like it's a direct contact and that it's in the family home. There are people that tell me that they went to a family's home for a dinner or a meal or a celebration, and then they got infected in that home, and they took it back to their house too. So it's it's a direct contact, I believe.
So you think...
Not airborne.
You think that the droplets that people cough or sneeze, they hit on a surface. Then someone else comes along without gloves, touches that surface, and then they put it to their face, their mouth, and that's
yes.
how it goes?
That is my belief, and that's my personal belief. And that's from listening to all of the stories of all of the patients that have come on how I think it's being transmitted. Now, when my patients come, they're not actively coughing with production. They don't have a productive cough. This cough is more of a deep cough caused by the fact that they cannot breathe. And this is the scariest symptom. When they come in, they tell me, I feel like I'm going to stop breathing. I'm afraid to go to bed because I don't think I'll wake up. I cannot take a deep breath. And when they try to open up their lungs and take a deep breath, they go into a very frantic cough that gets worse and worse and very difficult to calm down. I will share with the readers that I have discovered how to calm down the cough and how to make the hypoxia feel better. Most of these patients are suffering not from bronchial pneumonia. Most of these patients with COVID, what I believe they have is high altitude sickness. And so if you take this patient, even when he's in the office, and you lay him flat, completely flat, on the exam table, and you raise his knees up, into a position where his knees are up, he's flat on his back, all of a sudden, within 2 to 3 minutes, it's dramatic how much better they can breathe, and the coughing completely stops. So it's not uncommon for me to be running up and down the hall in my office. I have 5 exam rooms, and if I have a new patient that gets placed in one of the exam rooms and I hear just a persistent coughing, I will stop, go into that room, and take that patient, lie him down, lift up his legs, and his coughing stops. And he's very happy because he's breathing much better.
Now, one of the significant things that can be monitored to determine how far along in this process you are and statistically what likely is going to happen to you is your PO2, right?
Yes, oxygen saturation, yes.
And you use those little finger things.
Yes, I do. I have one.
Rather
I do.
Than blood gases.
Yes.
And so you can tell right off the bat whether somebody is functioning at 98% or 40%.
That is correct. And I have patients that walk in the office that are at 85%. And I have had them come back in crisis after consuming sugar. At 70%. Very, very scary. I had one hospitalization where the patient's O2 sat at home was 46%. And again, these are oxygen saturations that you measure because with COVID, what appears to happen is that the virus somehow hides the oxygen molecule from the red blood cell. And so it's that high altitude sickness effect. And if the COVID is controlled or killed by the hydroxychloroquine, this spontaneously resolves, and it resolves very quickly. So I have patients that come into the office now, and we have what we call a stock bottle of hydroxychloroquine. And if this patient is in respiratory distress and they're looking poorly and their oxygen saturations are low, I will go to the stock bottle and I will give them the first dose of hydroxychloroquine in the office. Now you realize I have 5 rooms. So if I spend an average of, 15 minutes with each patient, by the time I go back to see the patient that just received the hydroxychloroquine, that patient is very happy. He's actually shocked because his symptoms are all gone and he cannot believe that that one pill could reverse his symptoms that quickly. And they're very grateful and it's very nice to take care of patients that are breathing again. And so one of the things that I've done is I've taken pictures of these patients. And I have before and after pictures where the patient's on his back with his knees bent on the exam table. he comes in gasping for air. And then when the patient leaves, after the visit, the patient is smiling and he's breathing normally. It's truly dramatic what this medication does for COVID-19.
So your statistics in your office indicate that you have almost 100% cure rate using your protocol. Is that right?
Yes. Yes, we've been very, very fortunate. All of our patients have recovered. I've not had a single problem. Early on, one of my first patients, very, very heavy. He had bad diabetes. Again, I didn't have as much experience with this virus. Doctors learn on site. Every patient that comes in teaches me something new. We recently learned that the best way to sleep was on your back with your feet bent. At bedtime, we raise those feet under pillows. That was something that we learned maybe last month. A month before that, we learned that you don't want these patients to have any kind of sugar. I would have patients that had completely recovered, and then they'd go home, and they'd have a very small bowl of cereal. And within 2 to 3, 4 hours, they were back in the office in respiratory arrest. I mean, they were not breathing. They were not moving any air. It wasn't even wheezing. It was just a complete not moving of any air with low oxygen saturations, requiring multiple breathing treatments to try to get them just, able to breathe. And so we had one patient that did not do well at very early on in our treatment protocol. He was, I decided he had to have oxygen, wanted to do a nasal cannula with some oxygen tanks and also an oxygen concentrator. At that time, because of COVID, the oxygen company had a no-contact drop-off of the oxygen concentrator and the oxygen tanks. This family, again, never having dealt with oxygen before, had a really hard time figuring out how to use the machine appropriately. And this patient got into trouble that evening. I actually went to the patient's home. We had to transport that patient to the hospital. I didn't feel comfortable, had, very low SATs. Went with the patient to the hospital, drove in the ambulance to make sure I got him to the hospital of my choice, which was Parkland Hospital here in Dallas. Immediately upon arrival to the ambulance, the oxygenation increased. By the time we got to the emergency room, the patient was placed on CPAP, which is 100% oxygen. He recovered fully in the sense that he was awake, alert, communicating with me, actually told me to go home because it was 2 o'clock in the morning. I was very excited about this. We had his hydroxychloroquine, his Zithromax, his aspirin, the protocol. I took all his medications, spoke with the ER doc. The next morning, the infectious disease doctor at Parkland Hospital in Dallas took my patient off hydroxychloroquine and put him on a ventilator upside down. He enrolled him in some kind of a ventilator COVID study, told the wife she could not speak to me anymore, could not contact me anymore because the study was private, and I lost follow-up with that patient. That's the only patient that we've had difficulty with. And I believe that patient was released from the hospital in June, but I have no follow-up on him. I don't believe that he died.
Okay. So I want to go back to something that you said because I think it is very important. For whatever reason, the COVID virus has a higher incidence of killing black and brown people. And brown people have a higher incidence of diabetes. And you found in your practice that if someone was going down the hill, that you had to get their blood sugars back to normal, in which case you had some remarkable success of them turning their disease around.
Yes.
Is that right?
So that is true. That's actually been the positive and the negative of having COVID. So what I discovered early on was that a lot of the patients that are coming in are diabetics, and they have not been properly diagnosed by their regular doctors. Their doctors have downplayed their diabetes. Well, you've got the early diabetes, or it's just a little diabetes, or it's just not anything you need to worry about, diabetes. And so these patients come in, and when I check them, they are diabetics. They're not being treated. They know nothing about appropriate diet or, avoidance of sugar. And so about 99% of the people that I've seen that are COVID positive in my office come back diabetic. 99%, huge number. And so what I discovered was that the initial patients that I saw, the first 50 patients that I saw, the ones that gave me trouble because they went home and they had a cup of coffee with, stevia, and it threw them into a respiratory, distress syndrome, or a small bowl of cereal, or a diet Dr. Pepper. These patients got very, very ill after they had all of their symptoms resolved. So it didn't take me long to figure out that this was somehow connected to the sugar. So when the patients came in subsequently thereafter, I put them on a very strict no-sugar diet. What has resulted from that, no sugar, none whatsoever, no carbohydrates at all, what's resulted from that is a massive amount of weight loss with a resolution of the diabetes, and these patients are now healthier than they were before they got COVID. So if you could look at something positive coming out of something negative, such as an infection with COVID, what it would be is that these patients, because of the sheer fright of dying, because they cannot breathe, what happens is that they get on a exercise regime and a good diet regime, and they literally reverse all of their illnesses. I've seen diabetes completely reverse, cholesterol completely reverse, and the weight loss that we see in our office within 2 to 3 weeks is as much as 20 to 25 pounds, as high as 35 pounds in 3 to 4 weeks. It's amazing.
So you say to your patients, no sugar.
No sugar.
No carbohydrates, which have sugar in them. And it sounds to me like that
diet. They have exercise every day.
And exercise.
They're exercising every day. Yeah, and that's another important thing, Dr. Henderson. Let me share that, because that was one of the reasons why the patients that I discussed earlier got in trouble. Again, these are patients that don't know that they're diabetic. They tend to not be on the healthy side. They're all overweight, and they've never exercised. And so in Dallas, we have a lot of humidity, we have a lot of allergies, and initially what I tell patients is go walk for 30 minutes, or go walk for 45 minutes, or do an hour of walking. Sometimes I'll do jogging if they're younger, or running. And what I noticed was that these patients were not doing well. They could not walk because of the respiratory symptoms that they had. And if they went outside, the allergies made their respiratory symptoms worse, and their hypoxia worse. And this is what happened with my first patient, is that God bless him, he did everything that I asked him to do, and he walked, and he got exhausted, and his lungs just pooped out completely. And so now what we tell our patients when they walk in the door is, you got to go purchase a stationary bicycle, because if you have a stationary bicycle, it does not affect the lungs. And these patients come in with symptoms in their lungs, the hypoxia, the restriction in their lungs, they can't take a deep breath. And so if they're sitting on a stationary bicycle, they can just pedal and pedal without any difficulty, and that decreases the sugar in their bloodstream and essentially starves the COVID cells. And so I have had a stationary bicycle installed in my office, and I've had patients that, are not listening and they're not paying attention, and I'll tell them, go sit on that stationary bicycle. Give me 30 minutes. And before the 30 minutes are over, I will hear them exclaim, I can breathe, because it's that dramatic. It happens that quickly that they're on a stationary bicycle, they're actually exercising, they're dropping the sugar in their bloodstream, and their lungs resolve, and they start breathing better. Truly dramatic.
Okay, so what do you do in the office if you have a diabetic that their blood sugar is high, and So you're going to put them on the bike. How aggressive are you going to be as far as getting that blood sugar down to, let's say, 100?
Yeah, that's a great question. And that's where it's so important that these patients see a physician. That's where our clinical background really, really does come in. Some of these patients are coming and they have already been placed on medication by their physicians. The physicians that won't see them now, obviously, because they have COVID, but they were seeing them, you know, every 3 months for their diabetes. And most of the time, these patients were not controlled. They didn't have A1Cs that were, you know, at appropriate levels. And so when these patients change their diets, I've actually had to take them off of their diabetic medication because their sugars start to drop low and they start to feel weak. And other patients that have never been on diabetic medication, depending on what their A1C returns, and again, other physicians listening to your podcast will understand what I mean, depending on what the A1C shows on the initial blood examination, will I just do diet and exercise or will I start diabetic medication? And so that's really where the medical training comes in. That's why, you know, this cannot be treated with telemedicine. This cannot be treated by, you know, mid-level providers. I mean, these patients are critically ill, can easily turn one way or another, and really do need the experience of a well-trained physician from the United States to take care of the entire patient. If we have COVID-19, this patient is immunocompromised. He has to have had some kind of underlying disease to have allowed this virus to have taken over. Most people who get a cold because they're not sleeping well, they're not eating well, or they're not healthy. And so if you don't want to catch COVID-19, get healthy. Eat well, exercise, sleep, drink plenty of water, and your immune system will fight off this virus. The only thing that can kill a virus is the immune system. And so, again, that is why it is so important for the physician to actually examine every single one of these patients. These are not patients that can be tossed to a mid-level provider. Just very unethical to do that because they can turn so quickly. They are so fragile.
Well, I've had a long career. I got my medical license in 1972. And although I am retired now, and I treat my patients because they are patients who have problems with addictive behaviors or the spiritual plan, I don't get into a lot of the problems that you're talking about, but I remember back in the old days that we always examined our patients and we didn't prescribe over the telephone for symptoms, and they had to come into the office and be seen by a physician. And somehow or the other, that's all changed. And
Unbelievable. I think the reason it's changed is because of Obamacare. And you know, I've been a big proponent against Obamacare. But Obamacare was thinning out medicine so that everybody would have access. Well, I think everybody had access. I can't tell you how many patients, you know, I took care of and didn't charge, and other colleagues would do the same. But now what we've done is we've replaced physicians by mid-level providers. So whereas you would have easily 8 to 10 doctors in an emergency room, now you have 1 or 2 doctors that are supervising 45 mid-level providers. Well, there's no way that you're going to get the same kind of care because they don't have the same kind of training. And so, unfortunately, we have really been very destructive with the quality of medicine in America because we have thinned out our institutions and our medical practices. It's very discouraging.
Okay, so before we move on to our next topic, I want to just hit the sugar again.
Yes, very important.
When I was trying to get people to lose weight, I was back in the days when Dr. Atkins was still alive.
Mm-hmm.
I used his diet, and it was low carbohydrates. You could only eat so much. in other words, low sugar.
Mm-hmm.
And my patients lost a lot of weight, and they did better if they were diabetic. Their sugars and everything were better. So does it make sense to you now that that maybe people revisit that particular diet or not?
Absolutely, absolutely. If you have not been infected with COVID, that is a wonderful diet plan to go to. Unfortunately, in the patients that I'm seeing, I have to be way more drastic. And these patients, again, are having problems breathing. And there is a definite correlation between the sugar and the respiratory problems that these patients are having. And so I'll give you an example. All of my patients have my cell phone number, every single one of them. So it can be very interesting 24 hours a day at my house. And I will get a phone call. I'm starting to cough again. I feel that my lungs are tight again. And so my first response will be, check your sugar. And they'll call me back. It's 115 or it's 120. And then I'll tell them, jump on the exercise bicycle. And then they'll call me back in about 25, 30 minutes. My lungs are better. Everything's fine. Thank you very much. And so with my patients who are actively trying to survive COVID, we go zero sugar. But what you have to realize, Dr. Henderson, and I know that you know this, that a lot of my patients are overweight. And so even though they are not eating any extra sugar, they're not bringing in any carbohydrates. And I know that that's almost impossible because everything has a little carbohydrate. But even though they're on a very, very strict diet, and we go over this in the office with them, we give them examples of what they can eat, what they cannot eat. The important thing is they have to be exercising and they have to be eating frequently, because if they don't eat frequently, the extra glucose that they have stored in their bodies as fat starts to release into the bloodstream. And this causes the COVID virus to go crazy. And so on patients that are overweight, that have stored energy, stored amounts of glucose, not only is it important that they eat the right thing, but it's also important that they eat very, very small meals very, very frequently in addition to the exercise and the quality of food that they're eating. Now, what I have found is that I haven't had too many complaints. These patients are not hungry. When I bring them down to very tiny amounts of food, we as a nation are obese. 85% of us are obese, and it's because we overeat. So my patients are not allowed to go to any restaurant. They're not allowed to have any processed food, nothing in a can, nothing in a box. It's all fresh. And the quantities of food are very, very tiny. And they are not hungry at all. And actually, one of the positive things is the weight loss. I saw a patient today. Again, he's a diabetic. I'm having a little bit of difficulty controlling his sugars. And he came into the office. And I think he's been with me since the second or third of, July. And this is his 1 week checkup, and he wasn't doing as well as I wanted him to. The sugars were still high. And he'd lost 35 pounds. And so he's got a lot of, he's overweight, very heavy, and he's got a lot of extra sugar. And so although he's not eating any sugar, his sugar levels are high because he's releasing sugar from the fat on his body. So sugar is the key.
Okay.
No sugar for the COVID. Keep the sugars under 99.
Okay. Let's move to what I consider the most important part of this interview. You have a treatment regimen.
Yes.
That you put patients on, unless there's some reason that they could not be on it.
I have not found a reason not to put a patient on it.
Okay. And what you have found to be safe.
Very safe.
And some of the disturbing things that I hear, fear tactics, try to indicate that what you use might not be safe. But I, like you, believe that that's not the truth. And so let's go over your treatment regimen. Everybody gets this regimen. You have a 100% cure rate. Your patients don't die. Now, to start off with, somebody's going to ask me, to ask you, how do you make the diagnosis on borderline cases? Is it all based on their physical examination?
Yes.
It is. So yes, you don't care. You don't care whether they have a COVID test or not.
Well, the problem that I have is that I have had a lot of patients walking into my office with negative COVID tests that are in respiratory distress, have night sweats, you know, low-grade fevers, body aches and chills, and they look like they had an 18-wheeler run over them. And so for me not to treat that patient would be unconscionable. And I have a lot of patients that walk in the office, and they have positive COVID tests, and they look healthier than I am because I haven't been able to sleep in the last 3 or 4 months. And then those guys do not walk out of the office with the protocol. And sometimes those patients are very happy to hear that they don't have COVID, although the test appears to be positive. And some patients are not happy, and it requires me a lot of time to give them reassurance that, you know, I don't want to treat you if you don't need it. You know, this medicine's not going to harm you, but we just don't want to abuse the medication. We need it to make sure that it doesn't run out or we don't have limited supply. So the physical exam is the key. You will know a COVID patient when you see him. You know, I don't get the mild cases. People don't come to Dallas, Texas from, you know, all over the state of Texas or even different states in America with a mild case. The patients that are coming because when they go to bed at night, they can't breathe. And that's very scary. And the way you're able to diagnose that is by listening to their lungs. They have a complete abnormal lung exam. And a lot of times, by the time they get to me, they're breathing very shallow because they don't want to take a deep breath, because when they do, it throws them into a very aggressive coughing fit. And it's very scary for their family members. So the physical exam is the key, and we do have a protocol. So my protocol starts with hydroxychloroquine, and I got this protocol from the President of the United States. He actually told me about a French physician that had treated 29 patients successfully, and this was early on in the pandemic, and really the only thing we were hearing was gloom and doom, and I was really at a loss for how I was going to treat these patients when they came in, because I know they have, you know, lung issues. And so it really started from there. And that physician recommended that we try hydroxychloroquine and azithromax, which is a very common antibiotic. I had had limited exposure to hydroxychloroquine because I have patients from Ethiopia that go and visit their family members. And when they do, we do prophylaxis for malaria. And so when the first COVID patients started coming in, it was very interesting that a lot of their symptoms were symptoms of malaria. The night sweats, the low-grade fevers, the body aches, you know, all of those symptoms are symptoms of malaria. When I started examining these patients, what was really interesting is a lot of them started having, they had problems with their liver. They had elevated liver enzymes, and I found that to be curious. And I wasn't sure if grandma was an alcoholic or, you know, they weren't being honest with me or we were taking way too much Tylenol, but actually it was the COVID. It was the COVID that actually elevates the liver enzymes. Not everybody shows this, but a lot of my patients did. And I contacted Dr. Armstrong, which had done a study at a local nursing home here in Galveston in Texas. And we know each other. And he said that he had not did not do any lab work on the patients in the nursing home, which was disappointing for me. But he said he was going to ask and see if his colleagues, if they'd seen that. And he said that they had. They had seen a few of the COVID patients show elevated liver enzymes. So I take that to be a patient who's had maybe a prolonged course of the COVID. He's had COVID longer than some of the ones that don't show that. And so the hydroxychloroquine, the Zithromax, the azithromycin antibiotic, and then I add to that regime the zinc, 50 milligrams of zinc twice a day. And I do that to help neutralize the virus. It helps the hydroxychloroquine, you know, control the symptoms so much better. Then I discovered that a lot of these patients, when they were not successful and they died from the COVID, a lot of them died from pulmonary embolism. So I added aspirin to my protocol, and I put these patients on 325 milligrams of aspirin twice a day. And then what I noticed was that these patients were very anxious. They were very nervous. They were afraid. The media was just blasting them with so much fear. If you take one of these pills, you're going to die of a heart attack. It's going to cause all sorts of cardiac anomalies. I would send patients to the pharmacy, and the pharmacist would spend 30 minutes trying to scare the patient from actually picking up the prescription. And then when the patient still wanted the prescription, the pharmacist wouldn't even give it to him. But again, at that point, I decided they came with such anxiety that I put all of my patients on Prilosec. And this is an over-the-counter drug, which is an acid. And what it does is it decreases the gastric juices so that they don't have the reflux and the heartburn, which can easily be confused with cardiac symptoms. And so none of my patients have called me to say that they're having chest pain or that they're having a heart attack or that they're having a reaction from the hydroxychloroquine. Quite the contrary. They're all very comfortable with all of the medications. They tolerate them very well. And then the last medication that I use depends on the exam of the lungs. If the patient is hypoxic, if the patient has a lot of, you know, wheezing, if he's congested, if he's not moving air, then physicians tend to use steroids or prednisone to control those symptoms. And so, again, I moderate these medications according to the patient. If the patient has a symptom, he'll take the prednisone. If his lungs are clear, he won't need the prednisone. If the patient is already on a blood thinner, he may not go home with the aspirin. You know, you have to, again, this is not a cookie cutter, you know, go to the grocery store and pick up five cans and that's what you do. You have to have a physician that can evaluate the patient, the comorbidities of that patient, and manipulate these medications. That's why one of the things I wanted to share was that, you know, my protocol is not the end all. There are many different ways to control COVID. And there are many doctors that are being successful treating COVID. You know, I've heard of things that people are using in different countries. Ivermectin, I have not used it. It's not something I'm familiar with, but I'm sure that it's been successful or doctors wouldn't be using it. I've heard a couple of other doctors that have used something locally. Again, I'm not familiar with those drugs, so I did not use it. I chose to use the hydroxychloroquine. I had some prior knowledge using that. I'd had some comfort using that. And the nice thing is it's very, very safe, and it's incredibly inexpensive. So, you know, my most dramatic patient was the 23-week-old pregnant woman walked in the door. She was frantic. She was afraid to sleep. She said, I'm afraid to go to bed and close my eyes for fear that I will die and that I will kill my baby. And she was 23 weeks pregnant. And I asked her, do you trust me? And she said, yes, I do. And I said, I want you to take this pill. And 30 minutes later, I walked into her room. And trust me, it was exactly 30 minutes later because I was pretty nervous, too. And she couldn't believe it, and I couldn't believe it, and she was perfect, and her symptoms were all gone, and she was 23 weeks pregnant. And I told her, I said, you're going to tell your OB-GYN? And she said, maybe after I finish her protocol, I'll let her know, because the OB-GYN had told her, do not go see Dr. Lozano. She's going to want to give you hydroxychloroquine, and that will kill you, and you're pregnant, and it will cause you to have heart damage. And that just wasn't the case. Hydroxychloroquine is very, very safe in pregnant women. It's safe in women that are nursing. They use it in Africa all the time for malaria. It's just such a safe drug. We just need to get that out there. And why this government is trying to change that narrative, why the American Medical Association is trying to change that narrative, why the CDC and the WHO are trying to change that narrative is totally beyond me, and it's sinister. It's absolutely sinister.
Well, I agree with you on that point. Let's go back. We're going to take each one of these drugs, and I want the people to know so they can tell their doctor. Hydroxychloroquine, how many times a day, and what's the dosage size?
So I cautiously tell you this, Dr. Henderson, because I'll tell you what I get. I get tons of phone calls from patients that say, tell me what these drugs are, and I'll go get them through telemedicine. And this is not going to be successful. It's not just about getting the medication. It's about having a doctor, you know, follow you while you're on this medication. And so one of the things that I encourage people to do is not to try to self-medicate. You cannot self-medicate because these drugs are used based on the symptoms that you have and your comorbidities. And so to just go out and get a prescription for hydroxychloroquine may not work effectively for these patients. And so what I want to do is, you know, everybody's has access to my phone number, my office number. I've posted it up on Facebook. Any physician that contacts me, I will be more than happy to spend whatever time needed to reassure them, first of all, that this protocol works, that it's been very successful in my office, to discuss with them in detail the medications that I'm using and the dosages that I'm using, and even help them gather the medicine. Because, you know, if you write the medicine and you send the patient to the local pharmacy, there is absolutely no guarantee that that pharmacy is going to fill that medication. That was my biggest problem, is I have two pharmacies right next to me, and neither one of them would fill my prescription. And I fought with the pharmacy board until I was blue in the face. And so I tell these physicians, when you're ready to start treating these COVID patients, and I hope that that's tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock when your door is open, what you need to do is you need to find an independent pharmacist. They're not easy to find, but they are there. Some of them are compound pharmacies. And these pharmacists are not afraid of this drug, that they're highly intelligent. And they're not boxed in by belonging to some big pharmacy chain where, you know, mandates whether you can or can't dispense this drug with a prescription. And so, you know, independent pharmacists and compound pharmacies are the best bets for getting your patients these drugs.
Okay. So I'm going to go over this one more time. If you have COVID, you treat it early with this regimen, Dr. Lozano has a 100% cure rate, and the regimen is
hydroxychloroquine
and
azithromycin,
azithromycin,
aspirin, and Prilosec are the medications that I use.
Right, and sometimes prednisone.
Yes, depending on the symptoms of the lungs. Absolutely.
Okay, so you can write those drugs down and take it to your doctor and say, this is a highly effective way of curing this disease. And you can call Dr. Lozano and she'll talk to you about it.
And let me give you the office number.
Okay.
It's 214-660-1616. 214-660-1616. And I have a small staff, so if you call and nobody answers, leave a message. We will get back with you within 24 hours, but you have to realize we're getting quite a few calls, and they're usually calls from patients, and so we're trying to accommodate them as much as we can. But a call from a physician will be answered very, very quickly, because, again, I understand that physician then has the, you know, capacity to treat hundreds and hundreds of patients.
Okay. And, you know, my goal is to bring you news that you won't hear other places, news that's below the surface, but the truth. And in my opinion, you're getting the best advice from Dr. Lozano today at this particular point in time, and you need to do something with it. Take something active. Just don't say, well, she's in Texas and maybe my doctor's here and no better or whatever. I don't know what you're going to use the excuse, but call her up and let's see if we can do something about this COVID pandemic. I've been doing this program for 20 years. It's the longest running, spiritually based talk show in the country. Maybe in the English speaking world, I don't know, but at any rate, you're not interested in that. But I've been doing this, and I don't get paid for it, for 20 years. And when I bring you something, I fact-check it to the best of my ability to make sure that you're getting the truth. And so that's what we've done today, is tell you the truth about early treatment of COVID-19. And I really appreciate all the listeners, and I would appreciate you passing this information of how to listen to this program, to all your friends and relatives and doctors and everybody that you can. And get out your pen, and I'm going to give you the link. It will take you directly to my most recent podcast. And this is the link, www.freedomfromaddiction.libsyn.com. Now, it's no spaces, all lowercase, and you spell Libsyn, L-I-B-S-Y-N. If you have any problems with that, and hardly anybody that gets the spelling right does, go over to my website and get in contact with me, and I'll work it out with you so that you can be able to get this important information. And Dr. Lozano, thank you so much for being on the program. You don't know how hard it's been for me to run down a doctor that's legitimate, that is not afraid, and has a protocol that will cure this disease. And so thank you so much for the time.
You're quite welcome, Dr. Henderson. Let's just save lives. Let's save lives together.
Absolutely. Well, you have a great day.
Thank you, sir.